It would be good to start off tonight's homily by saying that there can be a temptation in this weekend's readings to focus on either the work of evil or families, perhaps. But they are at bookends in the readings. Evil, of course, entering through the story in the Garden of Eden, and families entering through Jesus being accused of doing the devil's work. So somewhere in between those two bookends we can come together. So I'm going to avoid the extremes, if you like. Part of that is because I have for a long, long time had a great interest in the creation stories from Genesis. And there are two of them, and they're quite different. And they're written by two different authors. But I bet you won't be surprised to know that the author of tonight's first reading from Genesis 3 was most probably a man. I think that comes through a little bit there, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't think he was a fruiterer. So, remember that the Hebrew people were journeying from slavery in Egypt, and they didn't have their texts written down like we do, so they gathered at their campfires, as I've told people here many times, and they passed on the story of their life until they were able to get things written down. So not unlike the Aboriginal people of Australia, our first peoples, the same thing, it's passed on through the story. And tonight we go past the first two stories of creation, and they come together. Yahweh and what he has created comes together. And so we start to talk about the opposites, if you like, that exist. And those opposites are the good and the bad, of course. And therefore, we start to get our first connection with the family. We get the image, for example, of the Holy Family and how perfect that is. But there's no such thing as a perfect family. Jesus was without sin, but he still caused his parents anxiety. He's causing his mother and his cousins and brothers and sisters, who would be relatives, causing them anxiety tonight. They've come to see him. Mainly they've come to see him to save him from getting into trouble with the authorities. They want him to change his ways because they don't understand. That's not a sin, not to understand. It actually can drive us into the occasion of sin by the way we go about gaining knowledge. Let's go back to the first reading. And that knowledge was gained through disobedience. So I think that the four questions that God asks are hugely important today. And remember that the family was perfect in the Garden of Eden. I just said there's no such thing as a perfect family. But the first family was perfect because they were obedient to God. And the word obedient means to listen to. And they listened to God. And then they chose not to listen to God. And the family became fractured. And then you see back in the gospel the result of that fracture. But you also see the result of the healing, what we would call in biblical terms salvation. So through the pain, there comes the glory, but it doesn't come without pain. So the four questions are that God poses in this perfect scene is, where are you? Now, God knows all. God knew exactly where they were. But that's the question, I guess, that we ask, or we hear God asking us now, where are you? And I'd be saying, where am I in my relationship with God? Ultimately, I want to be part of the family, God's perfect family. He has written down on the palm of his hand my name and your name. So whatever else happens in my life, the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever else happens, I know at the end of my life, he will call me back to the palm of his hand because he wrote my name there. I am his and he is mine. I must rest in my God And doing that comes with a lot of joy, but sometimes a lot of pain. So we have the questions of suffering. We have the mystery of suffering. And as I said to you last week about mystery, mystery is to be pondered, not solved. And so through the pondering of our life, we often ask, or we often hear God ask, "Where are you?" I'm sure sometimes he'd be saying, "What are you doing?" The next thing he asks is, he says, "Who told you that you were naked?" So shame enters the world. Along with shame comes guilt. And guilt can be a helpful thing in the course of our family dysfunctions at time, and our family discussions and our discussions with other people. It can drive us to behave better. So shame enters the world as a deep, dark cloud that prevents us from resting peacefully back in the perfect garden with God. Then God asks them, "Have you been eating of the tree I told you not to eat from?" Now, this sounds like a conversation between 2 5-year-olds. "She made me do it." That's where it ends up, isn't it? "What is it you've done?" is the last question that he asks. Not just to the woman, but "What is it that you have done?" So in those 4 questions, there is a whole possibility of each and every one of us working out exactly what is our relationship with God. If I'm flying solo, if I'm doing my own thing, I have stepped out of the perfect garden and I have stepped away from the perfect family. You will find your rest and you will find your peace and you will find your joy in God when you acknowledge that you belong to that family, that you are his and he is all yours. When you find that joy, you are very, very close to God. So for Christians who go around miserable and sad, I'm not convinced that they've actually come close to God at all, because God, in that perfect place, symbolised by Eden, with the perfect family, God is there waiting for his sons and daughters joyfully. It doesn't mean that we pass through life without suffering, but it allows us, once we know that my name is in God's hand, once I know that, I can bear what life throws at me better. The hard and the soft, the difficult, the easy, pain and the ecstasy. These opposites in our life are dances. They kind of come back and forward together. And God many times refers, especially through the Psalms, about the dance of our life. And dance is a joyous thing. So I come back again to saying, if you answer the question, "Where are you?" "I'm here, Lord," then you should be a joyous person. And I really hope you are. It's sometimes hard to see that, but people who are close to God are joyous, and we want to be around such people. But truth also says that inside every success, there are signs and seeds of failure. And inside every failure, there are signs and seeds of success. The person who rests joyfully with God can see those things and can bear those things. So the 5th question is, after what God asks the woman, "What have you done?" The 5th question that God asks us now is, "What are you doing?" Or, "What are you going to do? Are you going to be my joyful son or daughter, or are you going to remain sad and miserable and ultimately alone? If you do that, you forget that I've got your name here, and this is where you're coming home to." That's why Christians don't have to fear death. It's the completion of what God began right back at the beginning of creation. It is our name that is written in the Garden of Eden, and it's going to be a homecoming for us. That should be a cause for great joy in our life. And God knows that. He knows that. Well, he created joy and he gave it to us so that we could celebrate being his sons and daughters. So I ask you, what are you going to do with that?